Welcome to Subway Sports Talk.
Dan, clear of the closing doors, please.
Welcome to Subway Sports Talk. My name is Peter Kennedy, and I am your host. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in to SST on Apple Podcast app, Spotify, and on YouTube. Joining me today, as they will throughout all football season, we got a winner. We got two winners here, actually. We debated that before we started the show. We got two winners on the show today. First and foremost, the real OG winner of winners, best record in the league right now, Cody O'Connor. How you doing?
Feeling good, Pete. 2-1. A win is a win is a win, right, Patty? So we'll take it. We're moving forward. Week 3 didn't trip me up. It tripped a couple people with those big spreads that went down. Oof. So not I didn't fall for you, NFL. I'm coming.
And normally I would always go to our guy Pat Boyle first, but Cody deserved this one today, so I gave him the first intro. Patty B here also with the winning week. I'll run through the picks and all that stuff, but Pat, what's up, man?
What's up, Pete? Yeah, I may or may not have said Raiders plus 4.5 on the picks pod last week, but I did type out Steelers, maybe on purpose, maybe on accident, maybe just on accident flip the pick, but that's what went on the graphic, that's the final answer, and that's what counts. So 2-1, and we will take that and run to week 4.
The graphic does not lie. So you, I believe, are 5-4?
That's correct.
Cody, you are 6-3, you dog.
Rock and roll.
Oh my gosh. And I went 0-2-1 with my Saints push. So I'm now at 4-4-1. And Mark Shanlugan from 4-2 to 4-5 with his 0-3 week.
And ducking smoke.
And still not here to defend himself. It is what it is. But for today's episode, we have a great plan ahead. We will talk about the New York Giants. We will talk about the New York Jets. And it probably won't be that fun, but based off our conversation last week on the Wednesday podcast, you know, you might have an idea of where we are, but after that game against San Francisco, a lot of things to figure out for the Giants, and then the Jets, just one of the worst offensive performances you possibly could have watched on a football Sunday in 2023. So we'll discuss that as well. After that, the big topic will be the three teams that got upset on those big-time spreads, including the Baltimore Ravens going down to the Colts, Cowboys down to the Cardinals, and the last team that is escaping my brain, and Pat or Cody will say it.
The Ravens.
I said that one.
The Jaguars.
There we go. I knew I'd get there. So Jaguars, Ravens, Cowboys, all lost. Big-time favorites. All got knocked down, ruining survivor pools left and right. And it's, unfortunately, I have to say this myself. I was on the Cowboys in the survivor pool. I'm out, and my life-changing pot is just not coming my way. It's not happening just yet. Maybe next year.
You might have some other life-changing pot, but yeah, the life-changing pot of money, yeah, gone for this year.
Another time. All right. Well, anyways, let's get into the Jets and Giants here. And
I want to
ask you guys about kind of to start it off. I want to ask, who do you think we should start with? Because I almost feel like that's part of the conversation here because of how poorly the Giants went, and it was on Thursday, and how poorly the Jets went. You can argue for both being important conversations to go through some of the miseries for both sides. But Pat, is there a team that jumps out to you like, no, we need to talk about this team first because of what just happened?
I think the fact that the Giants played last Thursday coupled with the Jets just being a total embarrassment, specifically Zach Wilson, I think you got to start with the Jets.
I tend to agree, right? Especially since the Thursday thing, but also like the Giants were bad against the best team perhaps in the NFC, like a fantastic defense, a very, very good offense, and they played poorly. Even though their defense, you could argue, had some silver linings. The Jets' defense had silver linings, but that offensive performance was extraordinarily bad. So let's start there. Let's start there with the New York Jets. And I saw you tweet out earlier, Pat Boyle, at Pat Boyle 44, by the way. If they're not going to give Tim Boyle a go, they might as well give Pat Boyle a go. And to that, I say, yes, I agree, because it is so bad at this point to watch Zach Wilson try to move the ball that you think they'd have to do something else. Now, at this point, Tuesday night, 7:45, Trevor Siemian's been signed. But Pat, where do they turn? Does Saleh finally, you know, own what's happening in front of all of our faces? And what's next for this Jets team that still has hope to compete every week because of the defense?
I hope he owns what everybody has been screaming for weeks, if not over a year. And maybe hopefully this conversation does sound like a broken record, as bad as that sounds off the jump, off rip. So it might sound like a broken record, but again, like, what else did you expect out of Zach Wilson when we've known that this is who he is? For anybody that is still, the jury's still out for you, wake up. Zach Wilson is not an NFL quarterback. He never has been. He never will be. So Joe Douglas planting his flag in the ground as long as he's could, dying on the hill of, hey, I whiffed on the number 2 overall draft pick, and I still have my job. Like, he should own that. He should own the fact that he not only whiffed on the number 2 overall pick, the franchise quarterback, he also kind of whiffed, as much as I think Mekhi Becton still has a good future. So far, he's whiffed on the left tackle, the two most important offensive positions, the left tackle protecting the franchise quarterback and the franchise quarterback. To this point in their career, and I can say definitively for Zach Wilson's entire career, have been and are busts. And Joe Douglas is still going to keep his job at the end of the year. He's not getting fired. So, like, he should literally be parading around New York City and New Jersey saying, ha, I basically fucked up as bad as you can, and I still have my job. But, like, there is no more debate around Zach Wilson. He can't play the position, and it's become more obvious than ever in the last 2 weeks. And I don't want to hear Dallas has a good defense. Sure they do. The Arizona Cardinals just put up 28 points on them. So they obviously ain't that historically good. And I don't want to hear the excuses about the weather and the rain at MetLife Stadium on Sunday, because you've ran out of excuses. You have run out of excuses for Zach. So, yeah, last year Robert Saleh saw what happened, right? He let the locker room dictate the identity of the team when it comes to the quarterback position. They're all wearing Mike White shirts. They've literally cast Zach Wilson like a leper out of the clan, out of the group, and now in the offseason, signing Aaron Rodgers, having no definitive backup quarterback plan, they knew that, hey, we have to protect this kid's mindset, his mental health, his ego at all costs, and we have to try this plan until it absolutely blows up in our faces. But they should have known that's what was going to happen. If you saw him play quarterback last year, I said this about Mitch Trubisky last season, and I'm going to drop the same exact quote. When Mitch Trubisky went to the Buffalo Bills to be a backup quarterback for Josh Allen, might even be 2 years ago at this point, and I said, I don't care if Mitch Trubisky is growing on Josh Allen's ass. He will never be a good quarterback. And, like, take that with Zach Wilson and Aaron Rodgers and multiply it by 100. There's nothing he could have learned from Aaron Rodgers that he could have then instilled into his game. He's just not capable, right? Again, it's not fun to trash somebody's career, but this is the sad reality. And it is now, for the second straight year, a team that is loaded at basically every position on the team, with the exception of the offensive line. But even then, a great offensive line, and the Jets would still be struggling to put up 21 to 24 points if Zach Wilson's under center. So it has become apparently obvious they can't ride this anymore. That's why they signed Trevor Siemian. Trevor Siemian should be starting under center on Sunday night against the Chiefs. And if he's not, then, you know, again, it's not going to happen. But Robert Saleh should not have his job at the end of the year. He should not have his job on Monday morning, and neither should Joe Douglas. You need to give yourself a chance. The Jets are 1-2. As much as the season feels like it's over, it is not. You're not going to beat the Chiefs no matter who's playing quarterback on the roster. And you're probably not going to win the next 2 out of 3 games that they have after that. But the playoffs, it is week 4. You still have a shot. You still have a chance if somebody other than Zach Wilson is playing quarterback. Because you know what? You can win a game against the Denver Broncos. You can win a game against the New York Giants. And hell, as good as they seem, the Chargers can lose to anybody on every day. So they have 3 winnable games in the next 5 weeks. Trevor Siemian, a veteran that is at least somewhat competent at the position, needs to be under center. And again, there's no debate anymore about Zach Wilson. That offensive performance was atrocious. It was horrible. You literally had fans in MetLife Stadium, their teeth falling out of their head, screaming. I don't know if you saw that on the broadcast on CBS, but I mean, man, it is just, I feel like I have vomited and then regurgitated it back in my throat several times. As disgusting as that sounds, trying to watch Zach Wilson play quarterback, because that's how disgusting it looks.
Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, I don't even know how much to add to that. The one thing I'll say about the supporting cast, I think it's a little bit overblown how talented the receivers are. I mean, Lazard's a nice player. Cobb's a nice player at this point in time. Garrett Wilson is the one and like tried and true, like sincere great weapon, right? That's it, kind of. Everyone else is okay. So it's not like he's throwing to, you know, the best receiving core in the league and can't get anything done. Last week against the Patriots, it felt like nobody was open. Every time they did a replay of like either the all 22 or the wide shot from the side, it's like, oh, no one's open. No one's open. Now are we talking about Nat Hackett? Is it Zach Wilson's fault? It's all their faults. They all suck right now. So I'm not even disagreeing with you, Pat. Just something to point out. And it's something to say about Joe Douglas. The fact that he blew it on quarterback and left tackle perhaps and is not going to lose his job shows how good he's done at basically every other spot on the team. So with that being said, he should have even more confidence to rip a Band-Aid off rather than let this thing fizzle until their season's over in week 8, 9, 10, whatever it may be. But Cody, what do you think about all this?
You said it. There is not much more to add, because this is solely about Zach Wilson and his inability to lead this team in any capacity. He just can't. That's a good Patriots team and defense. I took them in our pool this week for at least a couple points, because I thought that's a good Patriots team, better than they have been probably viewed at and valued at, right, as an 0-2 start. But Zach Wilson can't move the ball at all. I mean, you could throw numbers, you could throw the offensive line, you could just watch the game and just see that he is not picking it up. The game is too fast for him. I don't know if there is any chance that he will become a guy. I agree with you, Pat. I don't think he is. And I think they have to go with Trevor Siemian, not because I think Trevor Simeon's the answer or he is some type of savior. It's because anything is going to be better than what Zach Wilson has brought to the table for them. They have really next to no chance. And it's a shame, because that is a very talented roster, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But the proof is in the pudding. You can't get it done with Zach Wilson. And if you don't do it quickly, you are going to lose any shot you have at making the playoffs.
And Pete, I was just going to say, I'll add this, because you brought up a good point. Like, you know, people look at the all 22 and say, nobody's open. The receivers aren't getting separation. It's not all Zach's fault. The offensive line stinks. And again, I promise you, if you put somebody in the lower tiers of the quarterback rankings in the NFL under center for this team, they beat the New England Patriots on Sunday. They make the playoffs last year. They put up at least 22 to 25 points almost every given Sunday. You had two offensive rookies of the year on the same team last year. Garrett Wilson, who won it. Breece Hall, who would have won it if he didn't get hurt. The offensive line, yeah, it's not great. It's also not horrendous. It's not like Zach Wilson's under pressure right away every single time he snaps the ball. I've seen some bad offensive line plays so far to begin the season. Monday night, the Los Angeles Rams, they don't have a good offensive line. Matt Stafford, now the Bengals have a good pass rush, but Matt Stafford was under pressure almost immediately on so many snaps. You know who else doesn't have a good offensive line? The Arizona Cardinals. And Josh Dobbs has found a way to put up points. They have schemed. They have found a way where he can use his legs, and he can also use short passes to get skilled position players the ball in their hands and let them, you know, make something out of nothing or make something out of something. Right? Like Zach Wilson, on 3rd and 18, the Jets would rather run the ball. They'd rather run a draw and try to pick up 6 yards and play field position rather than even trying to throw a screen, because Zach Wilson can't do that. He can't hit a 5-yard slant across the middle without you worrying about an interception. He is that incompetent at the job. If you put Desmond Ridder under center, I promise you the Jets offense would be twice as good. If you put Derek Carr under center, the Jets would be in the playoffs this year. You had Aaron Rodgers, you didn't have a backup plan. And, you know, when you sign a Hall of Fame quarterback, you don't envision him getting hurt, but you should have had a backup quarterback. You let Mike White go to Miami, and you said, you know what? No, Zach's our guy. He's going to be the future of this team. That was the wrong decision. That was a wrong decision. And now it's bearing the ugly fruits of that labor, of that wrong decision. So I don't agree when I hear, oh, well, guys aren't getting separation. Guys aren't open. it's the quarterback. Because you put any other quarterback in the National Football League right now under center, and the Jets are a better offense. The Jets are scoring points.
I agree with almost all that. I think I felt exactly the same watching Desmond Ridder as I did Zach Wilson this week. Like, almost identical.
But at least Desmond Ridder can use his legs. And again, you want to put some blame on the coaching staff? Sure, because Zach Wilson's not totally incapable of running. We've seen him, I think it was his rookie year, towards the end, I think he ran for like 85 yards against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. So he has shown he can actually at least somewhat use his legs and not just rolling out to the sideline and, you know, throwing a ball up for grabs or ruining a play, but that he can actually run and give you some other element to the quarterback play. So maybe that's the Jets, that's Robert Saleh and Nate Hackett's fault that they haven't utilized that. But man, when it comes to the arm, when it comes to decision making, he is single-handedly costing this team.
Yeah, agreed. I don't even think we got to go any further. The only thing I'll add to put a pin in it, this Chiefs game, you know, it is what it is. It's almost like with the Giants playing the Niners last week. It was like, okay, we hope the Giants compete with the Niners, that they put up a semblance of hope against the 49ers. The Jets are unfortunately in the similar spot. You hope their defense shows up against the Chiefs, makes their life hard. Maybe it's a closer game than we expect, but you're not expecting to win. The game of the year for the New York Jets is this Denver Broncos game the week following, because teams are toying with the Denver Broncos defense right now. Like, obviously, we know Tua and the Dolphins just put up a 70 spot. No one's going to expect that unless the Jets got seven pick sixes against the Denver Broncos and Russell Wilson. But if the Jets offense can't do anything against the Broncos right now, that's when it's truly, truly doom and gloom. It's over, it's over, it's over. Because the Chiefs are the Chiefs. The Broncos can be gotten. And then after that, the Eagles, again, throw it out. Then they got some winnable games, like you mentioned, Patty. So this week is going to be tough. The week after that is their season with Zach Wilson or whoever it may be. Because if that game doesn't go well and the offense still sucks, Nate Hackett might be gone, Zach Wilson might be gone, and it might be the best thing that could happen to the New York Jets.
It can't be Zach, though, Pete. It can't be. Like, you can't. It might be. You can't roll. It might be. It can't be. You can't roll him out there Sunday night against the Chiefs. And if they put up like 16 points, be like, oh, not bad. You know, we saw some positive signs from Zach. No, because you know what? And
then
you
have to roll it out more. Yeah.
Lines aren't everything, and betting lines and look ahead lines. But you know what the Denver Broncos are right now in the look ahead line? They are 3.5 point favorites against the Jets, a team that just gave up 70 points, a team that can't seemingly beat anybody right now. And they are favored. Yeah, but still, they are favored against the Jets. That is how bad Vegas is telling you they think the Jets are if Zach Wilson's the quarterback. Don't even give him a chance. Give Trevor Siemian the playbook. Give him the ball on Sunday night. See how he does against the Chiefs. And then you say, all right, he's got a week under his belt. Now we're playing for a season. You beat the Broncos, you're 2-3. You're 2-3. And again, you're probably not beating the Eagles no matter who's playing under center. But then you're 2-4, and you're playing, who is it, the Chargers the week after that?
The Giants first.
You're playing the Giants. You're playing the Giants, and you're telling me the Jets can't beat the Giants?
Careful.
Cody, I know you've seen this Giants team play. You're telling me the Jets, with the defense they have, couldn't beat the Giants if they get competent, not, you know, mediocre quarterbacking play. They're 3-4.
We're getting another 13-10, 15-10.
Let
me finish with this.
Cardinals team the Giants came back against.
I know, but let me just finish with this, and I'll let you guys go because I've been talking too much. There is a reality with Trevor Siemian under center. The Jets are 4-4 going into Week 9.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. Like you said, Denver, the Giants, and going to Week 9, you know, yeah, why not? It's possible. No, they have a bye week, so that's actually impossible. But point taken, 3-4. Sans the bye, right? So,
well, I would say 4-4 after that Chargers game. That is their eighth game of the season.
I mean, the Chargers, even when they stink, put up 20-something points. And you know what I'm saying?
You got to put up points to beat the Chargers.
Yeah, like I know the Chargers have been weird to this point. Cody just bet on them in Week 3 here and got a dub. The Chargers put up points, so that's kind of a tough one, but it's possible. It's possible. So we shall see. Let's move on from the Jets and talk about the New York Giants, because they have their own issues right now with their offense, and there's a number of offenses right now. You look around the league and you just go, can they move the ball? Can they get first downs? I mean, you looked at the Falcons this week against the Lions. They couldn't really get anything going. The Bears were horrendous. The Giants were horrendous. It was just ugly left and right. The Bucs couldn't move the ball against the Eagles too much last night. Well, actually, they did a little bit, but not too much. The Giants are in that conversation, unfortunately, right now. And with Daniel Jones's contract, it's going to be a point of contention. They have to put up some numbers in week four here against the Seattle Seahawks. The Seahawks have some playmakers on defense. They have a bit of a poppy defense, perhaps, where they can make some plays, but they're not exactly stopping people from scoring points. Is there even questions? Let me start with the defense here. Is there questions about the defense right now? Because I thought they put a valiant effort against the Cowboys in the first half. I thought they put a valiant effort against the 49ers that entire game. And the Cardinals is the Cardinals. That game was weird as hell. But is there questions about the defense right now, or are the questions only about the offense for you, Cody?
The questions probably lie with the whole team. And again, I'm afraid to say, but it lies with the coaching staff as well, because they're not capitalizing when they have their opportunities. They're not doing the things they did last year that got them wins. And they are a team that is not going to blow you away with talent. I don't think any of us really would have come into this season and said that they are up there in the upper echelon of the league talent-wise. But coaching, they did get better. They should improve. All those things were plausible. But the defense, while, yeah, they put up a good effort on first and second down, and then it comes to third and 15, and Deebo Samuel's running rampant. Third and 12, same drive. Christian McCaffrey gets a screen. I think Isaiah Simmons got held on it. But the point is, they didn't get off the field. So when it mattered most, Brock Purdy threw a couple questionable throws they could have intercepted. And when you play a team like San Fran, I know we're looking forward, but I have to go back first because this is what I just saw. You have to capitalize. And it scares me now that in at least two out of the three games, and take two quarters in that Cardinals game too, that they are not doing the small things. They are not getting the 50-50 balls, the 50-50 calls, whatever you want to call it. Those things aren't going right for them right now. And they need to, because they are a marginal team. So the question marks probably lie on both sides. I think Aziz is coming back this week. I think Deontay Banks is playing, but the reliance you have on the rookie cornerback and Deontay Banks and Aziz Ojulari, who's as big a question mark health concerns as there is, it's a little scary. So there are some questions on both sides of the ball, but Micah McFadden was a heck of a bright spot. He was flying all over the place. Maybe it's because the rest of the team didn't do what you hoped they would do, but Micah McFadden did look really good, and that's a positive in the linebacking core. But no, there's questions everywhere, including, like I said, the coaching staff. And the Seahawks, while they are a good team, they're a borderline playoff team, they're a team that the Giants have to beat, especially because the games after this are the Bills and the Dolphins. And they looked like the best two teams in the league this week, and they seem like so far away from where the Giants are. So this Seahawks game is a one they have to win. And they're going to have to do those little things to be able to do it.
Yeah, Pete, I would just add this really quickly. As much as we want to, you know, say we'll throw the first game out against the Cowboys, and as much as we want to say, oh, it's the 49ers, what did you expect? We got 3 weeks of evidence right now, and the Giants defense has given up 98 points, right? They are 24th in yardage allowed. They are 29th in rushing yards allowed. And they are second to last in sacks. They've got 2 sacks through 3 games. So they're not getting after the quarterback. Like Cody said, they're not tackling very well, because all San Francisco had to do was throw a screen on 3rd and 15, and it was like, they're going to get a first down. Like, you expected on 3rd and 15 that San Francisco would convert somehow, some way. And again, you gave up 28 points to Josh Dobbs and the Cardinals. As decent as they look now, maybe they're not terrible. They beat the Cowboys. They put up 28 points against them. This Giants defense, which I thought would be very solid, has been anything but. Wink, at least in the games that I've been watching, and, you know, when I'm not watching on Red Zone, when I'm solely locked into the Giants, and they've had 2 primetime games, 2 out of the 3, he's not, you know, we know he loves to blitz, we know he loves to bring pressure. Doesn't seem like he's bringing pressure at the right times. It seems like he's pressing the wrong buttons, when to bring pressure, when not to bring pressure. It seemed like the Giants blitzed a couple of times on those third down screens, where it was just like, yeah, the 49ers block incredibly well, and yeah, they're so great at doing that, but just looked like when the ball was already caught by McCaffrey or by Elijah Mitchell, there was nobody there to even rally to the ball. So they're just not doing the fundamental things right, on top of not being able to get after the quarterback. I mean, can Kayvon Thibodeau show the hell up one time? Like, you better hope that Aziz Ojulari is coming back right now, because they have no presence in terms of getting after the quarterback. Teams are going to double Leo in the middle, and Kayvon Thibodeau is not going to get after the quarterback. So, you know, he had a lot of complaining to do about social media GMs. Dude, you have been terrible. You have been terrible. You're supposed to be the guy that was supposed to step up and be a big difference maker on this defense. I'm not expecting him to be a TJ Watt. I'm not expecting him to be a Trey Hendrickson. But I am expecting him to make a difference. And he really hasn't done much of doing that so far this year. So if the Giants aren't getting after the quarterback, we've seen the run defense is, you know, pretty average. Like you said, Michael McFadden is the guy that you're hanging your hat on for this run defense right now. And the secondary is pretty young and it's pretty inexperienced. So I just see a lot of ways that this defense can get carved up. And you can't be relying on Daniel Jones and this Giants offense to put up 24 to 28 points because they're just not elite enough to do that.
Real quick, Pat, thanks for highlighting the tackling because that was one of the worst displays of tackling I've ever seen in a professional football game.
It was atrocious.
I know how skilled those Niners guys are, how big and strong they are. There was a play, I don't remember the linebacker running at Debo, running a slant, and he literally bounced off of Debo, who didn't see him coming, which is insane. I get it. Kittle, Debo, Christian, fine. Freaking gang tackle, form tackle, work on it. I know that's not a thing anymore, but Jesus, they must have missed 16, 17 tackles in that game, and it's embarrassing, especially in prime time.
Yeah, to put some stats on top of what you guys are talking about, I just sorted defensive stats by turnovers here, and the lowest amount of turnovers in the league, according to Pro Football Reference, is the Denver Broncos and Los Angeles Rams, with just one turnover created. However, the way in which this sorted mistakenly put the Giants and the Raiders all the way at the bottom, even though they have zero turnovers created so far this year. So a bad sorting job by Pro Football Reference, but I'm glad I figured it out. I was like, where the hell are the Giants? They're not at the top. I go to the bottom. They got zero. They just got sorted to the bottom by accident there because they should be at the top when I sort from worst to best. Zero turnovers so far from this team. And on top of it, they're not getting after the quarterback like you mentioned, Pat. So that has to change. You know, again, all the stuff you guys said, completely accurate. And for this team to actually do something defensively and put this offense in a position to succeed one time is to turn the ball over. And we see how much that means for certain teams, like, right, even the Jets in week one, right? They turned the ball over a couple times and that allowed them to stay in that game. Other than that, the Bills are winning that game, right? So it's very, very simple. You got to turn the ball over, especially if you're not sacking the quarterback and creating third and longs, fourth and longs, or stopping people on third and long for that matter. So they got to get some freaking stops in here, and they're giving up a ton of yards as well. On the offensive front, believe it or not, they are 5 touchdowns out of 8 red zone appearances for the Giants. So from a percentage standpoint, that's fine. That's actually not a bad percentage right there. 5 out of 8. That's pretty good. The bad part is getting there only 8 times puts them at the bottom level of the league. They're ranked, or they're tied for 21st in the league in red zone possessions. So yeah, maybe the red zone offense has been fine when they get there, but they got to get there a few more times a game because right now it's not going to cut it. And just like we mentioned last week, that schedule's not getting easier. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a grind for this Giants team to figure out a way to get back into this playoff race. And with teams like the Seahawks and the Lions and the Packers playing better football, throw the Rams into that mix. And before you know it, if they don't start winning some games, they're going to start looking up at the playoff rankings and not have a freaking chance. On the Daniel Jones front, let's just talk about him for a hot second. Or Pat, you got something to add before that?
Yeah, I was just going to say where we think it's season's on the line for the Jets against the Broncos. I think the season's on the line Monday night against the Seahawks. You lose that game, you will be 1-5. And
it's
it will
100%
be
100% on the line. Absolutely.
See, the only reason I would disagree with that is because Commanders, Jets, Raiders comes up as 3 in a row down the road. Right. So if they do take care of business against teams that they are supposed to beat or should beat or whatever you want to say, they can get back to a respectable number by that week 9, week 10 range. I think they play the Cowboys in week 10 there. So they could technically get back into playoff range with some more winnable games at the end of the schedule there. But that's now asking a lot. You're now asking a team who's getting used to losing to go out and beat the Commanders who do not suck, the Jets who have a great defense we just talked about, and the Raiders who have been frisky enough and for a bad team can at least move the freaking ball right now, right? For all the Josh McDaniel hate that he gets, deservedly so, for all the shortcomings of Jimmy Garoppolo, they move the ball. They can score some points, and even if it's not a ton, it's more consistent than the Giants right now, getting first downs and just keeping their drives alive. So it's a lot to ask for the New York Football Giants, but again, on the Daniel Jones front, are we seeing anything from Daniel Jones and this offense to believe there's some reason that this offense will get better over the next 4 or 5 weeks?
They need to be healthy. And unfortunately, injuries are a part of the game. And that probably shows a little bit about the talent or lack of on the roster. But I told you how important Andrew Thomas is. And he's more than that when you're playing against the Niners. So they showed some signs of life. They had a good first drive. But things quickly flip in these games, just like they did against the Cowboys. Second drive, they get the ball down, or they're tied 3-3. And the very first play from scrimmage, Nick Bosa goes untouched and takes Daniel Jones down for an 8-yard loss and completely ends that drive. Those things can't happen. They just simply cannot happen. Then you get down, the run game gets taken out, you already are down Saquon Barkley. And why, Pete, I know you tweeted this and we were talking about it in the chat. Why is Jalin Hyatt not at least in the game? You're an offense who clearly struggles to push the ball downfield. The Niners, the Cowboys are daring you to throw the ball over the top, and you're not doing it. So the underneath stuff is just not there. There is no play action because no one's afraid of the run when you're down 30-12. It's not a thing. So they are a team that's a little bit reliant on being in a game so that the offense can fully function. They could get the motions going. All those things that Daboll did so well in creating opportunities, moving Daniel Jones out of the pocket, getting the ball out of his hands quickly. Well, now you add Jalin Hyatt to that. And however you want to use him, Daboll, you should figure this out, not me. Please use the freaking guy. Wandale Robinson is back. He's another guy who can open up the offense. It has to be. And if it's not, because you know Seattle's putting up 20-plus, 24-plus, they will lose again. They will end up 1-5. And yes, there are games that are winnable after that. But you mentioned it. A 1-5 team that's already talent deficient is asking a hell of a lot to try to make the playoffs. So please, Brian Daboll, listen to Subway Sports Talk. Your pal Cody O'Connor wants to win just like you do. Please put Jalin Hyatt in the ballgame. Please open them up. Please.
It's classic bad team stuff. And I think back to the Knicks, and Pat, you're wearing a Knicks shirt right now. I think back to the Knicks when they were bad, right? When the Knicks were not a playoff team like they were last year or expect to be this year, there were all these moments where it's like, why is Evan Fournier playing 34 minutes? Like, are we getting anything out of this? Are they getting anything out of this? Why are guys like Miles McBride getting 6 minutes a game in garbage time when we need to just see what we have? Right. And it's classic bad team doubling down on the players who are mediocre, who are run of the mill, who aren't going to move the needle, to just run them out there because they're technically professional athletes at their positions. Right. Like, they're technically a run of the mill standard operator when it comes to what they're supposed to do on the court, or in this case, on the field. But you have an upside guy who can make big plays, who did it the week prior. And I know me and you, Cody, definitely put some money on Jalin Hyatt for his touchdown over 15 yards, because it's pathetic that his over-under is at 15 right now in this portion of the league or portion of the season. It makes no sense to give Paris Campbell 9 targets when Jalin Hyatt's getting, 15 snaps a game. Like, clearly Paris Campbell is a professional wide receiver. He can do some things. He's got some speed. He's not bad. We're not saying he's bad, but there's not a lot of upside when it comes to Paris Campbell. There's not a lot of upside when it comes to some of the other guys that they're throwing the ball to here. Even Hodgins and Slayton, like, they're fine. Hyatt's the upside guy who can be a future number one on this team, or a high-end number two on this team. For him to go targetless, or one target, two targets, is pathetic, and it's bad teams doubling down on mediocre offseason acquisitions to try to prove that they did something right. Prove that you made a good draft pick. How about that? Prove that you got a guy who can take the top of a defense, which he's shown he has the ability to do. If he's out there for 12, 15 snaps again against the Seattle Seahawks, I'm going to lose it. And I'll tweet it out again and again and again, because it's really pathetic.
It would be horrible coaching and horrible strategy if Mike Kafka and Brian Daboll don't try to get him in the game plan immediately. Immediately. Like, we're talking like classic first play action fucking bomb. Like, go for the house on the first play from scrimmage. Set the tone early. Primetime game at home. Like, that's the kind of stuff that puts a team back on their heels. And look, the Seahawks, you could run against them all day long last year. So far through three games, they've got the second worst pass defense in the NFL. And they played the Rams, who they shut out in the second half in week one. Or excuse me, they got shut out behind the second half week one. Either way, the Rams, yeah, they've got Stafford, Puka Nacua, and Tutu Atwell. They've been pretty damn good, but still, they played the Rams. They played the Lions. Sure, you're going to get thrown against by the Lions. And then they played the Panthers, who, you know, the Red Rifle was slinging the pill against them. So you can throw against them. You can throw against them. Daniel Jones, this should be a game where Daniel Jones throws the ball 40 times and he throws it for 350 yards. And mixing it up too, not just playing the safe underneath bullshit, like taking deep shots and then also, yeah, mixing it in and letting your skill position guys, if Saquon plays, getting him involved with some screens, getting Wandell Robinson involved with some motions, little drag unders, little bump and runs, like, give these guys a chance to make plays after the catch, but also take the deep shots. And, I mean, I guess that's in essence the plan for throwing the football. But, like, still, like, yeah, they should be throwing all over this Seattle team Monday night.
And normally you wouldn't want to compare your coach of the team you root for to Sean McVay, right? But the Giants are in a position where you should be comparing Brian Daboll to Sean McVay because he was that guy last year. He was the coach that took the league by storm, was playing risk on football, and that's how they got the good record in the first portion of the year last year, by being aggressive, by going for it on fourth downs, for going for touchdowns instead of field goals. That's what got them in the playoffs last year. And it wasn't until he got tentative, because there was now some playoff expectation on the Giants, where they started to struggle and started to not gain massive reward by taking some risks. I'm at the point with Daniel Jones that I don't care about the interceptions anymore, right? Like, yes, some, not all interceptions are created equally. There could be some bad ones. Obviously, you don't want him throwing a bunch, but I'd rather him throw some interceptions down the field than to see the A dot be so pathetic that every single person watching at home who's a Giants fan goes, what's this offense doing? It feels like Eli Manning back in 2017 when he had no time to throw and he threw 3 yards down the field every time. That's the worst case scenario for the Giants right now. I'd rather see DJ throw for 300 yards and two interceptions. I'd rather it be Jameis Winston than what I saw against the Niners in week three. So I don't know. They got to figure something out on the offensive side.
Real quick, because you just said he's in the same conversation. He's the coach of the year. He's the reigning coach of the year. That's not a crazy statement that you just made. That's who he is. That's who we're expecting, right? So the reason, at least for me, that I'm so frustrated is, albeit the score was 30-12, the Giants actually had a shot to win that game against San Fran. And if they did a couple different things, if they make some big plays, they're right in it. And they just aren't doing that. And that's why it's like, where is the team we saw last year? Because I thought it was well coached. I wasn't thinking it was just luck. And now I'm a little bit nervous as the Vikings are 0-3. Is it that? I don't know.
Great call, Cody, because they're went from 11-0 in one score games last year to now they're 0-3 in one score games this year. And the Giants are looking very similar in that ilk right now. So let's move on and talk about our next segment here. We got to talk about the three teams who were upset here in week three. That includes the Cowboys, Jaguars, and Ravens. So Pat, I'll go to you first. I don't know if you want to go with the team that worries you the most or the least, but which of those upsets stands out to you that you want to talk about?
I will go with the team that worries me the most, and that's the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, they didn't just get upset. They got absolutely mollywopped, annihilated by the Houston Texans at home. At home! And that was coming off of a bad loss at home to the Kansas City Chiefs. So you think, oh, classic bounce-back spot. And they made C.J. Stroud, who is a rookie in his third game, look like a fucking future Hall of Famer. And that was the Jaguars pass rush that I was like, all right, they're going to get after him. They're going to make his life a living hell. And also for Houston, they were missing multiple guys, including multiple guys in the secondary. Jalen Petre was out. Derek Stingley, their big-time corner, was out. And Trevor Lawrence, for the second week in a row, had no idea where to throw the football when he was in the pocket and anytime he was under pressure. I mean, man. You know, Trevor Lawrence is, in my opinion, the most inconsistent quarterback in the NFL right now. Because last year he showed excellent flashes. We were like, yes, this is finally the step forward. Year one was just because of scumbag Urban Meyer. He's going to be fantastic. They come all the way back in that playoff game last year. They perform very admirably against the Kansas City Chiefs. You think the AFC South is theirs. It's nobody else's. And look, I get it. The Jacksonville Jaguars as a whole played a garbage game, missing a field goal, getting a field goal blocked, putting the ball on the carpet every chance they got, every chance they had an opportunity to get back in that game. But man, when you're down at the half 17-0 and you score a touchdown to make it 17-7, you're thinking, okay, Jaguars are going to get back into this game. This is where Trevor Lawrence steps up and we get a defining Trevor Lawrence moment. And man, it was the exact opposite. You know, some of those last drives in the game, I'm trying to think of the plays, who he was throwing to that stuck out in my head. But, you know, missing guys. I'm trying to remember the interception that he threw, if it was his fault or if it was a pass that was deflected. But I do remember watching several plays and their attempt to make that comeback. And Trevor Lawrence did not look like a quarterback that you would, you know, put your money on to make the playoffs, to be a Super Bowl contender, let alone to be a division winner in a very, very weak AFC South. So to me, back-to-back bad losses where the Chiefs, you know, the Chiefs offense did not play very well either. That game was there for the Jaguars to win. And I do remember Trevor Lawrence throwing guys out of the end zone when they were in the red zone multiple times during that game. So man, this Jaguars team, yeah, they've got to play better team football, and they were terrible really in all three facets, and the defense deserves just as much blame for Sunday. But going forward, if they're going to be the team that a lot of people thought they were, and that was runaway AFC South champions, Trevor Lawrence has got to step up. I'm not sure if that was a fluke loss, very concerning loss, and I'm left yet again wondering who exactly are the Jacksonville Jaguars, because I don't know.
Now they got back-to-back games here in London, which you could argue is a good thing for them, and might be a home game atmosphere for them because they're so used to going there. Back-to-back game in London had never happened for a team before, to my knowledge. So they got an uphill battle now as well. They got to take care of business against the Falcons, who also played terribly in week three. But, you know, we know the Falcons can do some stuff on offense, and we do kind of trust their coach a little bit to this point, more than we trust their quarterback. But the Falcons are not a gimme. And then after that, they have the Bills, right? So we were looking at the Jacksonville Jaguars. I bet them to win over 11.5 games. And all of a sudden, if you don't take care of business against the Falcons and the Bills, go back to the Colts, we're looking at a team that's going to struggle to get to 9 wins, let alone 11, and be the runaway AFC South winner. So it was definitely concerning. I don't know what basis I will use to say that I don't worry too much about them yet, because I don't think you have things to point to, right? The offense has looked really bad 2 weeks in a row. If they don't look good against the Falcons this week, my worry goes from a 4 to like a 7.5. Because right now, I'll just give them benefit of doubt early in the season. Let's see what can happen. They got better as the year went on last year. But if this goes poorly against the Falcons in week 4, that worry becomes a 7.5 real quick, real quick. Cody?
Just really quickly, oh, sorry, I have the highlights pulled up here. I looked back at that interception. Horrible throw. Under pressure, he feels it from the right side, tries to sidestep, and then just throws the ball directly to the linebacker who undercuts the receiver. Was not even close. So down 14, that's a drive to get yourself right back in the game, and he makes that kind of throw. Horrendous.
I would have said the same, that they were the ones that I was most concerned about of those three. One being because I have multiple futures riding on them, including the division. Two, because I will never worry about Dallas. I hate them and I couldn't care less what they do. I hope they lose every week. And every part of me wants to just be like, you see, the Cardinals are pretty good. Daniel Jones, second half, the Giants are fine. But I want to kind of point out the fact that the Jags are in the AFC South, and so that part probably makes you feel a little better. But the team that we haven't gotten to is the Colts, who just beat the Ravens. And to me, that kind of felt like an upset game all week. I was ready to back the Colts in our pool. I got spooked off just because sometimes I don't like to take a team who I think is inferior. And so I try to look for another way to go about my picks. But the Colts are kind of frisky. And the Gardner Minshew being the backup didn't scare me one bit. Gardner Minshew might be the best backup quarterback in the NFL. Outside of maybe Pat's guy, Mike White. I know he's ready to chime in over there. But Gardner Minshew is more than capable of handling that offense. And they just kept coming, man. And I'm not even worried about the Ravens, to be honest. I just think that was one of those games that it was a low-scoring, tough type of game. The Colts just would not go away. And by the end, they snuck it out. And that's really what I saw in that game. I'm not overly concerned about the Ravens. I am probably a little more concerned, double edge here, about the Jags because they lost to the Texans and the Colts are now 2-1. And they played the Jags tough week one. The Jags very easily could have also lost that game. They pulled away late, so the score doesn't look like it. But they've got played tough in that one too. So hopefully they do get right. I do feel like they will. There is something weird about the Jags and the Texans where the Texans kind of own Trevor Lawrence and the Jags. So hopefully that's just one week. But, you know, the Colts probably were more of a highlight to me in that Ravens game than even the Ravens. Not much concern about them. I still think they're a bona fide playoff 10-win team, almost any way you slice it up, and more injured than anyone's ever been in the history of the NFL, it seems, every single year. And they just roll out new guys, and as long as Lamar's under center, they're typically fine.
I agree with Cody, Pete, and I'll just add this. I did take the Colts in the up 10 early win on DraftKings at plus 300, and I think they led 13-7, and they never actually led by 10. And once the Ravens came back, I was like, this is toast. And then they ended up winning it in overtime when Justin Tucker misses a 61-yarder that you think even is a chip shot for him. So that was a very nice win.
Short, too. Yeah, that kick looked good.
Rare. And you know what? And I think with the Ravens front, the worries doesn't go so high because, like, they're a Justin Tucker kick from winning that game. And we go, okay, a little frisky there, but they got it done, right? So we're one kick away from the Ravens being 3-0 and saying, you know, it wasn't their best, but we're not going to freak out yet. So I don't think because Justin Tucker, who's one of the best to ever do it, missed a field goal that we should sit here and be worried about the Baltimore Ravens. You know, I think Gus Edwards might have gotten a little banged up in that game, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So we've got to see what happens with their running back situation. Justice Hill was also banged up, which is just like, what happens with these guys in Baltimore, man? They can't stay freaking healthy. And it sucks because when they're right and when Lamar's doing his thing, they're one of the most fun teams to watch. And right now, currently in the AFC North, the Pittsburgh Steelers are technically in first. Yeah, they're technically in first because they beat the Browns. The Browns have a much better point differential. The Steelers have a minus 14 point differential, but are technically in first because they won that game against Cleveland. But the Ravens should be fine as well. I'm not going to sit here and worry about them. I'm with you guys.
Yeah, and I'll just say this too. You know, Baltimore going into that game too was missing the left tackle, Ronnie Stanley. They were missing the center, Tyler Linderbaum. We talked about the litany of running back injuries they already have. And once again, in the secondary, the litany of injuries that they already have. So it just feels like, Cody, like you said, this team can never stay healthy. And that's why I don't think I would bet that the Ravens don't make the playoffs this year, rather than bet them to make the playoffs. I don't know what the odds would be on that. Maybe I can check that when you guys go. But it feels like, if you know, the injuries prevent them every single year, and they don't have enough depth to overcome them. Like, they're not an elite team on their own. They're a very great team when they're healthy, but they can never stay healthy. So just sucks. It's a tough position.
And Odell's hurt already as well. So, you know, another name on the list of injured players for the Baltimore Ravens. So yeah, I guess we'll see what happens with them. They do seem to have these games every year where it's like, oh, you're still seeing on red zone that Lamar's making some plays and they're scoring a touchdown here and whatever there. And then they just lose. Like, it happens every year with them, and they still end up with a great winning record when Lamar Jackson's the quarterback. So that's probably why I'm not concerned on their schedule. They have the Browns this week, which the Browns defense has been phenomenal so far this year, followed by the Steelers, who are no slouch, Titans, Lions, Cardinals. You know, they got some winnable games. They got to make sure they take care of business at least a little bit against their own division. But, you know, I probably wouldn't join you yet on that bet, Patty, even though now would be the time to do it if you want to bet them to not make the playoffs. And that leads us to the Cowboys, unless you found that number yet. Did you find that by chance? No. Okay. All good. We'll come back to it if we find it. But the Dallas Cowboys lose to the Arizona Cardinals, knocking me and so many other people out of their survivor pools. Looked like a layup. Looked like a defense going to run amok game for the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, Trayvon Diggs got hurt in practice leading up to this week. You can argue that threw something off for them. But one cornerback going down against the Cardinals should not lead the Cowboys to looking the way they did overall as a team, offense, defense, and everything in between. The offense had its own issues. Dak Prescott, more important important for the other team, but turnovers that he just could not make the play when it mattered most. It felt like they were in the red zone a bunch late in that game, could not get over the hump. I deemed the Cowboys the best defense in the league last year, that they're going to win 12 plus games, or not last year, last week. And then they lose to the Cardinals. That's football, baby. Cody, are you nervous? I know you don't care about the Cowboys and you want them to lose, but do you think they are falling apart a little bit here?
Probably a weird game and a big letdown spot. So you'd have to see it multiple weeks to be really worried. But if your thinking or thought or bet was for them to win the division over the Eagles, who still haven't played their best ball and are 3-0 pretty convincingly, for that sake, I'd be worried. But I never really had the Cowboys as like a Super Bowl contender. Because they're a pretender every single year who's talented and fails at the end, right? But, I mean, it's just one game. If I see them slip up multiple times, that'd be different. And I guess your biggest concern would be Dak. At least that'd be mine, because I've highlighted that. And I guess kind of like you said with the Giants earlier in the season, like your level of concern hasn't dropped. I've always kind of had this thought and feeling about Dak that he's just a pretty average, slightly maybe above average guy who falters in the big spots. And he threw an interception to end that game that if you look, there's a clip. I think it's just a photo, right, where he's staring at three linebackers and just kind of threw it in the middle of those three and was like, hey, anyone go get it. I don't care. You take it. I don't want this. So that is concerning. That part I would be. But again, it just hasn't changed my level of concern is probably my biggest point.
Cody, I feel like you and I have the same Twitter algorithm, because I feel like every week one of us brings up a clip or a tweet that we saw. And like as soon as you said that, I remember vividly seeing that freeze frame of Dak just throwing it straight to the Cardinals defense in the end zone. I think their run defense is also very concerning for me. The fact that Dobbs, the couple of QB design runs that he had, went for big plays, and James Conner, you know, still a good running back, no longer anywhere near his peak, and he was just running all over them, off the edge, through the tackles. So that Cowboys defensive line, yeah, they're going to get after the quarterback, they're going to get you pressured, but Jonathan Gannon, you know, give him credit, as weird and as dumb as he sounded in the offseason, you know, with some of the quotes he had, and as bad as we thought the Cardinals were going to be, you know, again, if they're making the Cowboys run defense look very, very pathetic, what are teams that can actually run the football? San Francisco 49ers, who the Cowboys will probably see in the playoffs. Philadelphia Eagles, who the Cowboys are trying to win a division against. What are they going to make the Cowboys run defense look like? So, yeah, just in that game overall, I mean, you know, look, we had three big upsets. I agree with Cody. I think the Cowboys are pretenders rather than contenders until they actually prove otherwise. But one big thing I took away is that they are going to have a lot of trouble stopping the run this year.
And I think every team, kind of like the Ravens as well, they do deserve that week where they kind of just don't show up. I mean, and the Cardinals are going to be the team for everybody probably, especially early in this year, where it's like, all right, we got ourselves an easy win. Let's just roll in here and dominate and just do what we do. And then all of a sudden, Josh Dobbs is looking like Pat Mahomes, as Cody alluded to in our breakout video on Instagram last week. It happened again, right? Like he looked great again, Josh Dobbs. And did you see the video Josh Dobbs put on his TikTok? He stitched Micah Parsons talking like, I'm throwing darts at you, I'm coming for you, blah, blah, blah. And then it cut to Josh Dobbs just like, dodging. And then he just smiles and waves at the camera. Like, it was so good. Josh Dobbs is becoming a great personality right now.
I also saw they didn't have his jersey in the team store.
Josh
Dobbs. Yeah, they literally didn't have his jersey.
Get that man's jersey in the freaking team store right now.
Had to win a game.
He's doing something. He'd be a Hall of Famer right now for the New York Jets. I'll tell you that much. So, yeah, again, Cowboys, the worry is not exactly there yet for their full season of wins, but their worry is 100% accurate for their playoff hopes and expectations. They got the Patriots this week, not a gimme. Followed by the 49ers, Chargers, Rams, Eagles. So for all these 12 wins that I'm counting for the Dallas Cowboys, it's not going to be easy for them over the next couple weeks. And Dak Prescott and this offense needs to get right. But back on that Ravens front real quick, plus 145 to miss the playoffs, 180 to make it. So honestly, this is probably as best a chance you got to get the good plus odds, unless they really fall, like they go on a run, but then you don't want to do it, right? So if you're going to do it now. Is the point on that one. But that's all we got on that segment. Last thing before we say goodbye, just because we're going to wrap up in a moment, but we'd be remiss to not bring up this game in week four, which is the marquee matchup of week four. The Buffalo Bills, whose defense has been a world beater over the past 2 weeks. Their offense is looking pretty good, but they're going up against the most electric offense in the NFL with the Miami Dolphins. Guys, what the hell can we expect from this game? Right now, Buffalo's -2.5. Do we expect more cooking out of McDaniel, Tua, and these boys? Or do we expect the Bills to show up to the task to slow down an offense that seems unstoppable right now?
Guess I will take it. Well, I think there's going to be points in that game because I just don't see a world where that Dolphins offense gets slowed down. I did say that the Broncos defense was not what we had thought it was going into the year. And obviously I didn't expect 70 points and 10 touchdowns, but that was without Jaylen Waddle. So the Dolphins are absolutely for real. If you weren't sure about it before, I'm certain you should be now. I expect a lot of points in that game, and this gave me a great opportunity. I have to pat myself on the back for this one because I quoted the graphic you put up, but I may have made the greatest, most non-sweat bet you could ever make with the Bills money line and the Dolphins money line. I got it at -102. I think it was -123 earlier, but they won by a combined like 84 points. And I just don't foresee myself ever seeing something like that happen. So I have to toot my own horn a little bit because just to see those two games to end the way they were, it was just like, man, what a justification for a pick.
And that was me going toot toot, by the way, on camera. If you saw that, that was I'm tooting your horn too, Code. That was a home run.
Any day, brother.
I can't wait for this game. And I just starting with last year, you know, all three games came down to the wire. Remember in Miami, you know, the Bills basically got gassed out by the Dolphins, and we had to talk about they were sitting in the Miami sun for like 3 straight hours and how their bench was right in the sun. It was like 95 degrees, and you saw Miami wear them down and win that game at the end. And then they played, what was it, right? The exact opposite. Wasn't that the blizzard game in Buffalo where they're throwing snowballs at the Dolphins players? And Buffalo barely won that game. They had to come back to win that one. And then they play each other in the wild card game, and it's Skylar Thompson under center, and you're thinking this is going to be a blowout. And the Bills go up 14-0, if I remember correctly, and they still almost lost that game. So I think the Dolphins have the Bills number. And this game's in Buffalo. It's going to be like 70 degrees. It looks like the look-ahead weather for Sunday. So it's pretty cool and calm conditions. With the way that the Bills offense has looked the last couple of weeks, I'm still not sold that the Dolphins defense is all that great or that they're all that gelled right now with Vic Fangio. So I think the Bills are going to be able to put up points if Josh Allen's doing his thing, if they get a good mix of having him run the football and obviously get the ball out to Diggs and Gabe Davis early. I don't know how much success they're going to be able to have handing it off to James Cook. You know, he might be the X factor of people that you would least think of. But if he's like getting 4 or 5 yards a chunk, like look out, because then they're going to put up probably 30 points. But again, we know that the question is going to be, can anybody stop the Miami Dolphins? Can anybody stop these schemes of Mike McDaniel, which have worked to absolute perfection so far, where Tua's 3-step drop and he's getting the ball out to Tyreek Hill, who's coming out of motion, or they're somehow finding a way to get him open when you know it's Tyreek Hill and you don't want him to be open. He's still open on almost every play. If Jaylen Waddle plays, it's how are we going to stop him? And then, oh yeah, the Miami Dolphins and Raheem Mostert are also a running machine right now as well. So they are clicking in every single thing they're doing. Does it turn out that this game kind of is a dud and maybe one of these teams just has an off day? I would think it would more likely be Buffalo than Miami the way that we've seen it. But don't be surprised if this is a game where now the conversation has shifted to even on the road. I know Buffalo's a 2.5-point favorite, but everybody, almost the public image is that, well, Miami's going to win this game. They're the better team. Don't be surprised if you get an A-plus performance from the Bills' defense and that this one maybe doesn't hit the over. I feel like everybody's going to be hammering it. I think it's at 53.5, might touch 55. But, you know, this is one where we hope we get points, and this is the real test is on the Bills defense, because everybody and their mother knows how elite, how historic the Dolphins offense has looked so far.
Yeah, this is a stay away for me, right? Like, I just want to watch this game as a fan. I want to enjoy it. I'm not going to bet it because so many things could happen. And in that game you're referring to in Miami last year, Pat, I'm pretty sure the Bills got to the red zone like 8 or 9 times and didn't score a touchdown. It was something along those lines where they got into the red zone over and over and over again and just couldn't punch it in. So we'll see if that Dolphins defense continues to have their number. But yeah, it's so fun. Devon Achane deserves a shout out as well. Because, yeah, it's crazy fun to watch that Dolphins team, and I can't wait to watch that game because it should be absolutely electric. And if it's not, Pat, you'll be dead on with that under possibility. Everyone and their mother wants it.
Spoiler alert, Pete. I think you're going to see the classic Patty B same game teaser here. I think you're going to see the Bills through 0 plus 3.5 and the under of some form, because it just seems like we're due for – a 31-28 game, 34-31, but I got a feeling that we're, you know, both these teams' offenses are due for some regression here this week.
I wonder if that defense for the Dolphins is struggling a little bit because they're on the field so much because the Dolphins score so fucking quick.
It was the Bills, you know what I'm saying, that blew out a lot of Washington last week. The defensive turnover, the stop. So it wasn't just the offense, even though the offense did look good. So it's certainly possible. It's a division matchup, but that's why we do it. You never know.
That's another good point.
Even everyone who either has or played against the Buffalo Bills defense in fantasy knows exactly how good they did last week with their 30-something points in fantasy. That was a game changer. But all right, that's all we got. Subway Sports Talk. Pat Boyle, Cody O'Connor, I'm Pete Kennedy. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review on your podcast app, subscribe, notification bell on YouTube, as well as follow us along on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, at Subway Sports Talk. The picks will be back again on Friday. We still got some solid records over here for the boys, and we're going to try to keep that thing going, keep it pushing forward into week 4. Follow on the socials to follow the picks. In case you missed the podcast on Friday, you can still see the picks on Sunday morning. They'll be on there. You can tail, you can fade, you can just talk smack. It doesn't matter. We're here for all of it, and we'll keep doing it all NFL season long. That's all we got. Subway Sports Talk. Cheers.